There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Hello and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, our daily podcast that brings together the best bits of today's show from Wednesday, January the 15th. UK chef Heston Blumenthal has made headlines hitting out at customers who photograph their food rather than eat it. But is it any of his business what people do with their meals once they're served? He's been speaking to the Radio Times saying that he just gets frustrated with people letting their food go cold, letting it spoil in order to take the perfect photo. It's become a business issue at the Fat Duck. They've had to sit down and have a discussion about how you deal with this. Do you potentially alienate customers by having a word, or because they are effectively paying for the food, they're paying to keep the doors open, do you let them do what they like? We got the opinion of a man who has had a Michelin star awarded for one of his restaurants, Greg Maloof, the Australian-Lebanese chef. By coincidence, I was having coffee with him yesterday, and while in the chat, I said, what do you make of Heston's comments? And even though Greg is in the UA at the moment, he lives here, he's consulting, he's helping other people set up restaurants, so he's not necessarily in the kitchen himself, he said he certainly knows the frustration.
You know, you've spent hours prepping in the kitchen, you've served up this gorgeous risotto, and you know, no one waits for risotto, not even a camera. So that's, you know, things like that, or soup, things that need to be tackled or eaten as they're served is paramount. You know, there's other things that look so pretty that you want to take a photo, and but you know, the flashes and the styling food once it hits the table is not a good thing, especially when the chef has spent quite a bit of time styling the dish himself, and there might be five or six people that have helped put that dish together, and then all of a sudden it gets restyled at the table. You know, there's limits there.
Yeah, when you start moving things around, I know better than a Michelin-starred chef. He's not the only chef whose opinion we've sought this morning. Yarrick Wismick is the executive head chef at Society Cafe and Lounge, as well as the newly launched Toplam. He went a step further. He reckons it's disrespectful.
There's two sides of the story. So we're looking from customer perspective, and we're looking from chef's perspective. Charging £300 for a meal, people are expecting to at least take a photo of it. But at the end of the day, chefs put in a lot of work into the dish that, you know, especially talking about a presentation, temperature and taste, that it's nailed to the top-notch standards. They're really trying their heart. And, it's a little bit disrespectful if people spending more time on taking pictures rather than just enjoying the food and then having that, you know, momentum without taking pictures. So I think there's both sides, because we always put in the pressure on marketing, and we want people to share the food, the pictures. And we also want to make sure they're enjoying that food without, distracting other people around.
Well, that's Chef Yarrick's opinion. I have to say, though, the court of public opinion is coming down very firmly on the side of the restaurantee, if you like, on the side of the person paying for the meal and taking the picture. Someone's messaged in to say, why do you think that taking a picture means that the food isn't being enjoyed? That's a little bit presumptuous. Someone else saying chefs shouldn't begrudge people paying for their food and letting it go cold taking pictures. They should just embrace the revenue.
And Mark, who wrote that message, says there's also an element of free marketing associated with it too. Word of mouth, viral marketing. I mean, we know the restaurant industry has known this for 150 years, that if you get one good review, or what is it, 10 good reviews to offset one bad review. So if people are taking photos of your food and saying, oh, my vol-au-vent was lovely, then happy days. That kind of social media endorsement, people do pay for it. They pay influencers to go to the restaurant. If people are going to do it for free, then why wouldn't you encourage them?
And we've just had a message come in the last 3 seconds. I'm sorry, but as a client, if I pay for a meal and it arrives, it's mine to do whatever I want with it. I can have one bite and leave it if I feel like it. Having said that, on the other side of the table, a message we got in from Ryan. Ryan says, I went to a fabulous restaurant in Sydney recently, and part of the experience was that you check your phone in. When you get seated, each table has a locker. And Ryan says it's absolutely brilliant because you really immerse yourself in the experience. There's no phones on the table. It's so much more enjoyable.
Well, I was at a hotel in Mumbai this weekend that's also a members club. And anyone can rent a room there. But most of the areas are no phones, no phone calls allowed. They don't ban you from taking photographs, but there is an element of the no phones in here and people like that. And it's considered a virtue rather than something that is a disincentive to attend the place and spend money there.
Look, I see the argument that if you're paying for the food, if you want to sit there and build a Jenga tower out of your fat chips, fine, it's your food. But we go to a lot of places where there are rules about how we dress and how we eat and drink. You go out in the evening, a nightclub will have a dress code. If you go to the cinema, there are rules about using your mobile phone. The small town I grew up in New Zealand has issued a ruling that no one is allowed to go to the movie theatre wearing gumboots, Wellington boots, rubber boots, or pyjamas, which probably says more about the small town that I grew up in, that this was causing a problem. But we do this all the time. We hop on different forms of public transport. No eating and drinking allowed. And we accept it. Is it a push too far for fancy restaurants to say, yeah, no phone, stop it?
No. Well, I'm going to give not the final word, but an important word to Emma Banks, who runs all the restaurants for pretty much half the world at Hilton. So I don't know how many thousand restaurants that is, but it's a heck of a lot. And Emma says this, seriously, the restaurant industry needs all of its loyal paying customers and the respective PR if they share images. If customers are not being intrusive to other guests, let them enjoy themselves.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
We're going to look at one of our top stories in a little bit more detail. These are the comments from the celebrity chef in the UK, Heston Blumenthal. I say celebrity chef, the fat duck has 3 Michelin stars. I've just done him a massive disservice there. But he's making headlines this morning for comments that he's given to the Radio Times about his frustration at people who photograph their food rather than eat it, and the executive decision that they've taken as a business not to intervene. We're asking what it actually means for the restaurant business here, this necessary evil of dealing with social media. We have Jarek Vismek, who is the executive head chef at Mad Hospitality. That includes Society Cafe and Lounge and the newly launched Toplam, in the studio with us now. Jarek, it's lovely to have you here. Thanks for joining us.
Hi.
What did you make of Heston's comments?
I think, it's a bit of, there's two sides of the story. So we're looking from customer perspective and we're looking from chef's perspective. Charging £300 for a meal, people are expecting to at least take a photo of it. But at the end of the day, chefs put in a lot of work into the dish that, you know, especially talking about a presentation, temperature and taste, that it's nailed to the top-notch standards. They're really trying their heart. And, it's a little bit disrespectful if people spending more time on taking pictures rather than just enjoying the food and then having that, momentum without taking pictures. So I think there's both sides, because we always put in a pressure on marketing and we want people to share the food, the pictures, and we also want to make sure they enjoy that food without distracting other people around. So there is a debate between the customers and the food business owners. So from my perspective, I had many cases that people were spending most of the time on taking the perfect profile of the food, and the food is getting cold and they send it back. So it is a bit annoying as a chef, you know, that you know they don't appreciate your work. But at the end of the day, you know, we trying to make the experience the best as possible, and you know, and I would not as a chef, I would not go and tell them saying, listen, your food is getting cold, you know. And at the end of the day, they are our customers. And we
how bad is that. The issue, or how big an issue is it here in Dubai?
You know, with growing social media impact and you know, and marketing involved, and it is huge actually, because this is the driving force of a business. You know, sharing with order on a social media brings a lot of traffic to the restaurant. You know, and of course it gives us the extra footfall that we're looking for. But at the end of the day, we you know, we respect that, and we always try to balance that that, you know, the marketing aspect with the food quality. So we accept that, and we always been known as a restaurant society that you know, we have a good looking food, and then it's tasty, good quality product, and then sometimes there's a queues at the door and people are waiting for the tables, and some other people, you know, taking pictures meantime, and it's sometimes we need to treat it as a quick meal and go, because we know this, some other people want to come in and taste the food.
Are you under pressure from your marketing and PR people? I mean, you're the executive head chef. You're deciding what's on the menu, what it looks like, what it smells like, what it tastes like. Are you under pressure to have food that looks good in photographs? I think it was Nigella Lawson who just said, look, no one loves a stew anymore because a stew looks terrible on Instagram. Are you under pressure to only include beautiful food?
I think you know it comes along with the food concept development, and I think they create a menu that is visually appealing and it tasty. It comes together like a marriage, and it has to work together well. And I wouldn't say that I'm a lot of, there's a lot of pressure on me or on the kitchen, but we always making sure we balance those two.
Well, you've just opened a new restaurant last month, Toplam. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that decision. We have so many people who come in the studio, sit where you're sitting, and tell us that the restaurant market here in Dubai is oversupplied. What's the decision-making process for opening a new one?
I think that it is oversupplied, and that's my you know, opinion about it. But it's oversupplied with the wrong concepts. I'm talking about in the wrong place with the wrong market research, and a lot of these restaurants closing down. And to be honest, let's be honest, but there's a lot of restaurants that are doing really well. We open and we're in our third year now, and we can't complain. You know, we always have that footfall. We always taking care of a business, about customers, you know, and then about our menu. We keeping things fresh. We refreshing the menu every couple of months, keeping people entertained. You know, we put in a lot of attention into each detail of an aspect of the business. So I think that the oversupply exists there, and I think it should be on some stage stopped. I'm not sure if you ever heard about Dubrovnik in Croatia. I think they closed down the ban for opening a restaurant for the next 5 years. I don't think this is going to happen here, because everybody wants to have their own part in the F&B. And everybody wants to open their own restaurant. But I think we should take an example from that on some stage and maybe focus on other businesses rather than F&B. So it is a little bit oversupply, but it's, as I said, it's oversupply with the restaurants that might not do well in the future. And, you know, it's a wrong concept or it's a wrong location. You know, so there's a lot of different
A lot of different things in that particular recipe, a lot of ingredients in that recipe. Jarek Wismik is executive head chef for Mad Hospitality. That includes Society Cafe and Lounge and the newly launched Toplam. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast. Newsmakers.
The movers and shakers shaping your world.
My newsmaker today is Eugénie Bouchard, who's the Canadian tennis player. Why is that? Producer Shruti's with us in the studio. Big tennis fan, has been to all four of the Grand Slam tennis opens, including the Australian Open. Why is Eugénie Bouchard our newsmaker in Australia today?
Well, she is now playing as a qualifier at the Australian Open, but she needed medical assistance during her first match yesterday, and that is because of the conditions in Australia at the moment.
Did you see the video that was doing the rounds yesterday?
Of Dalia Jakupovic
collapsing,
pretty much.
And that's quite sad as well, because Jakupovic was actually leading. She'd won the first set. She was 6-5 up in the second one, but she collapsed because the quality was so bad and she had this coughing fit and she had to withdraw from the match.
I mean, it was horrific to see, wasn't it?
Yes.
And sometimes we see with sporting people, when they're losing, oh, suddenly, you know, your leg starts hurting. Mm. And because you know that the game is lost.
Cross-country 1980.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. But she was in front. She was leading and she just couldn't carry on. And Maria Sharapova, one of the world's most famous players, was playing an exhibition match in yesterday. That was cancelled because of the fires. And I think this play has been suspended today, hasn't it, in the qualifiers for the Australian Open tennis routes.
Yes, so far it has been suspended, but Craig Tiley, who is the tournament director of Australian Open, has defended the decision to keep the tournament going.
As you all know, and I say this consistently, is the health and well-being of not only the players, the fans, our staff is of utmost importance, and any decision we make will be around that, the health and well-being of that group.
Not everyone's believing him, though, are they?
No, and international players like Gilles Simon has come on Twitter and he's sort of criticised the tournament directors and the organisers to go ahead with it, because he said that if it's 45 degrees, you know, during Australian Open, which does happen, play gets suspended. When the grass is really wet at Wimbledon, you know, play is stopped. Why is this not considered?
These people are athletes who have a career ahead of them. I mean, look at the length of Serena Williams' career. For example, you don't know how much damage this is doing to your lungs. The risk of playing at a time where there are warnings for everybody, not finely tuned athletes, about being outside, about breathing in the air, and about exercising in general is ridiculous.
And health officials in Australia, in Melbourne, had told people not to go out unless they had to. And then you have something like the Australian Open, which is obviously all out in the open. You know, the only roof is the centre court, and you can't really close that all the time. So I guess even Margaret Court has one. But anyway, the point is, it's still you're going outside to play tennis.
And it's unfair. Yeah. It's not. It shouldn't be happening.
Well, let's hear from one of the players now. We mentioned Eugénie Bouchard, who is in the qualifying tournament for the Australian Open. The main draw starts next week. But she's one of the world's most high-profile players, isn't she? She's got 2 million followers on Instagram. So when she speaks, the world takes notice. What's she been saying, Truths?
Well, she's also won Wimbledon. I mean, she was in the final of Wimbledon, so big deal, but, you know, had a bad form recently. But she had to get medical assistance during her first round win yesterday. And she was asked if she ever considered if these were the worst conditions she's ever played in.
We've definitely had, tournaments in areas where there's like a lot of, pollution and other things. Obviously with what's going on, you know, our issues are, you know, at the bottom of the list compared to everyone who's, you know, really suffering with the fires. But as athletes, you know, it's definitely not the most ideal conditions.
And there's this kind of controversy when you hold marathons in places that have poor air quality. I don't think you should hold sporting. I feel quite opinionated this morning. I don't think you should hold sporting competitions. They shouldn't be awarded. They shouldn't be allowed to be held in places that cannot guarantee the air quality. There is a lot of pressure on the global community to do the right things when it comes to pollution and when it comes to looking after their own air quality. I don't think they should be rewarded with being allowed to hold these kind of tournaments.
But is it also a loss of tourism? Because Australian Open is a big deal.
But did you see? So the video with the girl, and I, I'm not a huge tennis fan, so I don't know how many people would be watching normally at that stage of the competition. But when that poor girl was on her knees, choking, did you see the stands behind her were empty?
But that's, I'm going to be controversial here, that's more a case of women's tennis.
And it's the qualifying tournament, exactly. Isn't it? This is not the main event. The main event starts on Monday of next week, so in about 5 days' time. But I do tend to agree with you, Brandy. There's a limit. Should the fireworks have gone ahead on New Year's Eve in Sydney?
Mm.
They did. I've seen them. They're spectacular on New Year's Eve. I'm not sure it was the right time to be doing that. Should this tournament be going ahead? Cricket, I guess. It's not. I mean, there's not quite the same exertion as there is in an athletic sport like tennis. But
you're running around, you're out on the pitch.
Fast bowling is not an easy thing to do. So, listen, it's I have sympathy with your argument, Brandy.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast. Nobody wanna see us together, but
it don't matter, no. 'Cause I got you, babe. That is Akon, one of the most successful music artists of the past 15 years. 35 songs in the Billboard Hot 100, numerous Grammy Award nominations and multiple platinum albums. He's in Abu Dhabi at the moment, but not to sing songs. He is at the World Future Energy Summit. Extraordinarily, he is, as well as being a producer and a rapper, also an entrepreneur and a philanthropist. Let me explain. He has decided to give back through renewable energy solutions to people in need around the world. He's co-founded Akon Lighting Africa, Akon Lightning America USA, and is soon to introduce the world to Akon in his cryptocurrency and Akon City in his native country in Senegal, raised in the United States but roots in Senegal. Now, he's been on stage as part of the What Tomorrow's Generation Demands of Today's Leaders event at the World Future Energy Summit. He's been speaking with our correspondent, Natalie Lindo, and she began by asking him about the comments that he made on stage where Akon described young people as stewards of our planet's future.
I think it's super important, especially in Africa, being the fact that when you look at the statistics in Africa itself, I mean, over 65% of the population is under 21. So it's honestly full of youth, full of energy, and all they really need is the support and the tools to be able to utilize, you know, their brains and the capacity to where they can develop the country for us.
And you've made a huge transition from obviously a huge successful artist to giving back. You have several companies now, and one of those light bulb moments, I keep saying this, but there's no better phrase, was you wanted to do something for your grandma.
Yeah, that's actually how it all started, which is rare, a nice light bulb moment for sure. So ultimately, because of lacking all those resources to be able to provide electricity for my mom out there in the village, it opened up the door for me to be able to now explore outside and figure out ways to where we could, you know, combat that challenge. And ultimately, it led me into solar. Because when I tried to get into traditional energy for it, I realized just how complicated and political it was. So it was almost an impossible door to walk through. But the renewable side kind of opened up bigger opportunities, and it was actually better for the future and environment and all. So it all played together.
And one of the things I guess you focus on is empowerment with Akon Lighting. This is something you set up with your friends, and you want people to look at places like Africa in a completely different light. You don't want them to look down. You want to see it as a country that's surviving but and thriving.
Right. I mean, it's thriving in such a huge way. But I think what happens is ultimately in the position where Africa was in, I think it was designed that way. But I think now, because of how the future is actually being developed, it's actually playing to its favor. You know, being the fact that it is a clean slate and you can develop now from scratch, it actually creates ample opportunity. So honestly, if you can just see the opportunity, it's a goldmine for you.
I've been to Africa recently. I spent some time in Senegal last year. I was in Kigali and a few rural places in Rwanda as well. So what you're saying about a young community, a young generation who are open-minded, ready to do things, the world is starting to take notice. And that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about. Empowerment seems to be at the heart of what you do. So when you think about things like Akon, cryptocurrency doesn't see where you're from, what color your skin is. It's something that will be a tool for people to use and access and maybe level the playing field. Is that what the purpose was behind Akon?
Yeah, that was the main purpose, really. And also to give the young entrepreneurs, especially between the youth and the women all throughout Africa, because they're the ones that drive the economy at the end of the day anyway. But they're creating like literally their own currencies now, only because the currency that exists there is so unstable and it's untrusted. So, and I would say most of it come because of the fact that there's so much corruption within the government and, you know, the things that surround it. But ultimately, when you look at those kind of systems, that's dire for any country to grow. And if you can't trust your own currency, I don't even know how you can develop your own economy. So with crypto being like the leading aspect of it, it creates the security that's needed. It deletes the corruption altogether, and it creates a mechanism to where anything that you feel like you can tokenize or that actually has value, you can apply it to it. So it's like the perfect tool for any inventor of anything it is. You know, in Africa, you know, it's just filled with entrepreneurs. So these guys are inventing new revenue models every day, creating new products every day, and finding new ways to actually make a living. And I think the crypto aspect of it actually complements that very well.
So I mentioned I was in Senegal in November. I was in a village called Siou, and we were building a school. And I think when people talk about you in Senegal, the pride that they have for you as an ambassador, as a representative, is huge. And that's really important. But the talk about Akon City is something that everybody you meet is talking about. Tell us a little bit more about Akon City and what that might do for Senegal.
Oh, the Akon City is like is a huge legacy thing for me. More so because I wanted to see Africa in a certain light, and the only way to actually see it is to actually create it, because you know you have something in your mind that you just want to do, but you know it's going to be the biggest challenge of your whole life. And I'm at a position now in my life where I just want to take on that challenge. But we just finalized the land for it. It's 150 acres, that equivalent to 50 hectares.
And can you give us a hint about whereabouts it might be, or is that all top secret?
Oh, no, it's not top secret. It's actually in Bourgogne, a place called Bourgogne, 10 minutes from the new international airport that they just built in Senegal. It's right off the water. And it's a full futuristic city, crypto base, and it's going to have every latest development, technology, renewable source that you can imagine. Because I want it to be a real futuristic city and utilize all the resources and, you know, minerals that Africa has to offer, to that we actually export. We want to be able to keep and utilize that now for something that we know is capable. So I think with the resources that we have, we'll be able to create a literally a futuristic city that no one has never seen before there.
And finally, you mentioned this is a legacy project. I mean, that's something that's clearly very important to you. You've got the ability to maybe just sit back and rest on the money that you've made from music and what you're making with Akon Lighting. You can sit back and think, I don't need to do anything else. I think your commitment to the youth and the future is really interesting. Why? You mentioned to Jesse in your interview that you think it's really important that we trust young people. They're talented, they know what they're talking about, and they can educate us. Why did you come to that conclusion, and why is it so important to you?
I mean, because it's just so relevant, and it's so obvious. It's just so obvious. Just look at the world the way it's running now, right? It's just full of chaos, and it's nothing but a lot of older people with huge egos and traditions are not willing to let go. And I think when you're in a position where you're no longer open-minded and you're not even taking the young thoughts and even in consideration, and when you look at the world's development, it's all developed by young people. All the biggest platforms, all the biggest components, all the biggest things that's actually making a huge impact are all created by young people. So if you don't, it's just basic common sense. It's like, as the world is moving forward, as the future is, you know, being created, it's being created by kids in classrooms. And these are the things that's actually taken over the world to the point where we can't even live without it. Whether it's, you know, app development, whether it's components with cell phones, whether it's, you know, you look at like all these little gadgets that's being created around us that just kind of creates and makes life more comfortable for us. Because we're just lazy people by nature. So anything that helps us to do things easier, we adapt to it. And that's all the things that's being created by young people today. But now when you look at policy and how those policies actually complements young people and creates opportunities for them to be able to grow, whether it's financial, whether it's resources, those things don't really exist. And you find yourself having to fight for them or watch them fighting for it. And I just think that the system itself should be more balanced to be able to support the young people and the women and around the world that actually creates those avenues for us to live better.
And that is the producer, entrepreneur, philanthropist, and of course, Grammy Award nominee artist, Akon, speaking to Natalie Lindo at the World Future Energy Summit in Abu Dhabi. Thanks for listening. Rich and I will be back in the studio tomorrow morning, 6 a.m.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.